The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
After months of mounting public anger over the country's worst economic crisis in seven decades, Sri Lanka's president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, is on the brink of resignation. That's after a core group of activists rallied hundreds of thousands to demonstrate. Among them, a Catholic priest, a digital strategist, and a popular playwright. Pushing to revive the country's flagging protest movement, they began meeting in June at a seaside-tented camp in Colombo. Digital strategist Samira Deruvage.
We nudged the people in the right direction. People were already determined, they were already expecting something, and they were willing to commit themselves to this outcome. So what really happened by this core group was that we gave the people a slight nudge in the right direction, and the rest happened organically and spontaneously.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The island of Sri Lanka is rarely in the news. I had a gentleman call me yesterday during the chaplet asking for prayer for his country, and I thought we really should look at this. This is a story that's getting some international coverage. There is now hundreds of thousands of people that have joined protests in that country against the current government. They forced out their president, the prime minister, and the president's family, basically they've dominated the political scene in that country for a couple decades now, about 20 years. They're out. They're both going to be resigning. You might have seen some of the television footage of people in the pool of the president, and they set fire to the house of the prime minister. Why is this going on? Well, the immediate cause of the uprising was the government cutting off the supply of chemical fertilizers in order to force farmers to go organic. And I was just struck by that. And I thought, Sri Lanka, we talked about what was happening up in Denmark. We see what's happening here in our own country. In fact, I'll talk with a farmer coming up a little bit later. It's this new, this ideology of going green. And again, don't misinterpret. I'm all about making sure that if we could all be green, it'd be fantastic, right? How do you get there? Do you cut off chemical fertilizers? Do you no longer drill in your country and you cripple your nation and cause undue hardship on your peoples? I think there's got to be a balance here. I think there's got to be a progression. And we just you just can't just flip the switch. Even organic organizations, they thought that was a dumb move on the part of Sri Lanka. And it was because crop yields dropped by about 50%. And that came on top of power cuts, high inflation, bankruptcy of the government. Right now, it's not clear who the successor is going to be. But Reuters reports that a priest, as you heard in that audio clip we played, was one of the main people behind the ouster. Though they don't know, they didn't give his name or what order he's with, from what I understand. But let's pray for the people of Sri Lanka. And they're not alone. We know the dollar right now is on parity with the euro in Europe. Europe's feeling the cost of inflation. Energy is tied to all of this. It really is. It's linked to all of this. And we're going to see it here in our own country. Maybe tomorrow or the next day, I'll get into some of our economic numbers. I don't really want to do it today, but if you've seen some of the latest numbers, they're not good. Fed's going to be raising interest rates again. Some say 75 basis points, maybe a full percent. I thank God for his mercy. I thank God for the abundance that we have in this country. We really need to pray for clear thinking of our leadership. We really need to get this right. I think there'll be some sacrificing and some suffering in the days ahead. But I don't want to depress you or scare you. Bottom line is God's on your side. You will get through this. There have been people who've gone through more difficult times than you and I. And we happen to live in the greatest nation on the planet right now. So you have far more than most people ever will. So, I just share the news with you just so you're in the know on these issues. And just to give you a perspective, when you take a look at what's happening, when you see the ideology that's being promoted, I just think it's important to see that global perspective and look at what's driving it. What spirit is ultimately behind this? I want to also do a little mea culpa here, too, if I could. A little point of clarification from yesterday. I received several emails. I'm grateful for the correspondence I get from those who listen to the show, and thank you for the follow-up. Some people say, hey, Drew, what's going on? I'm hearing some new news regarding this 10-year-old girl that was, raped, the one from Ohio that the president, when he signed his executive order, came out saying, and his 10-year-old was raped and had to travel across lines. And You know, you heard that story about the abortions who made the claim that that 10-year-old girl had been taken from Indiana, you know, taken to Indiana, I should say, from Ohio for the abortion because she was 6 weeks pregnant and she couldn't get, she couldn't make a, you know, couldn't abort her child in Ohio. The only source for that story was the abortionist who in the past had not reported on statutory rape claims to authorities. So you wonder how true is it, right? Really, a 10-year-old, 6 weeks pregnant, here's an abortionist claiming this. And if that's the case, how come you didn't report the statutory rape, right? So people who heard the report, especially coming from the president, they were skeptical. They did their due diligence. The Columbus Dispatch has reported, and I just saw this alert literally before walking into the studio here. I was just getting into my chair here behind the microphone, and I get this text alert saying that Gershom Fuentes, he's 27, was arrested by Columbus police after they say he confessed. He confessed raping this girl not once, but twice. I mean, say a prayer for this little girl. Say a prayer for this family. And I know it's hard. I mean, this man, 27 years old, I mean, we had to pray for him, too. You think justice, right? Yeah, justice. He certainly, I hope he gets his justice, but we had to pray for real conversion of his heart and real healing with him, too. The police were made aware of the situation when the girl's mother contacted the Children's Services, Franklin County Children's Services, late June, and Fuentes is now being held on about $2 million worth of bond since he is undocumented, and he's considered a flight risk. So the attorney general there, his name's General Dave Yost. He had the attorney general's, his name is Dave Yost, not general, but he questioned the story and said that he's rejoicing that the rapist has been pulled off the street. I am too. But a little clarification on that story. So there was some truth to what was said. I want to make sure that we are always accurate in our reporting. We do our best we can to make sure that we give you accurate information. Any way that you shake it, it's just not good. You know what I mean? It's just not good. So, again, pray. That's all I can say. I don't want to elaborate anymore. And we need to pray for the Holy Father, too. There was an interview. And again, you know, I almost didn't talk about this, but I got to be honest with you, I'm frustrated. And I'll be straight with you. The Holy Father did an interview with Univision and Televisa, and he was asked about abortion. He made it clear that, you know, the unborn child is a human being. I applaud him for that. We're all on the same page, right? Then he was asked about President Joe Biden's position on abortion and what to do about him. And again, I'm not the Pope, so I humbly, you know, I submit to his authority. The Pope answered that he would leave it to Biden's conscience. And then he added, let him talk to his pastor about that incoherence. You take that for what it is. Here's a clip from today's Catholic Drive Time where Pope Francis comments on Joe Biden's incoherence on abortion is actually addressed.
This came out just yesterday. LifeSite News reported on it, but and others did as well. Pope Francis, in an interview with Univision in Espanol, commented on Joe Biden and whether or not he should receive communion. And essentially, he said that he is going to leave it to his own personal conscience and his pastor to decide whether or not he should go to communion. I find this fascinating, especially given the scandal of Nancy Pelosi recently. Joe Biden, as president, brought the full weight of the federal government to bear to support abortion recently. Even Archbishop Lurie in Maryland has spoken out against this. I find this fascinating. No, we don't have enough charity for Joe Biden in that regard, because if he dies in a state of mortal sin, he goes to hell. And where's the charity there? Where's the charity for wanting Joe Biden to go to heaven for eternity in the beatific vision?
Yeah, I said the same thing yesterday, and I just thought, hey, great point. You know, fraternal correction. There's nothing wrong with fraternally correcting somebody who's wayward or in a state of sin and who is perpetrating scandal and advancing a great evil. I mean, take a look at the commandments. How more vividly can you break a commandment? Thou shalt not kill, right? Joe Biden's doing everything again to make sure that really, women in very stressful situations make a mistake that not only terminates a life, but damages them. It's horrific. It really, really is. pray for Joe Biden. And I say it all the time. I do every single day. Pray for Nancy Pelosi. Pray for our bishops. You know, let's pray for Archbishop Cordiglione and for Archbishop Gregory and so many others. And just pray. That's all we can do. I'm so frustrated by what I see. Pray for our Pope. You know, incoherence is the word he used. He should talk to his pastor about that incoherence. That's true. Well, I hope his bishop sets him straight. World Net Daily reported that the Biden Department of Justice, led by Attorney General Merrick Garland, is forming what they call a reproductive rights task force, and they want to monitor state and local abortion restrictions. So they put out a video yesterday about the information of the reproductive task force. This might be new to you. Let me share with you in their own words.
The Supreme Court's Dobbs decision was devastating. The court took away a constitutional right, preventing women from being able to make decisions about our bodies, our health, and our futures. Since I rejoined the Justice Department last spring, I have witnessed our lawyers vigorously defending reproductive freedom. We enforced the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. We challenged Texas's near total ban on abortion. And we defended Roe before the Supreme Court in Dobbs. Because we feared this day might come, we have been working behind the scenes, too, to prepare for the possibility of Roe being overturned. Today, we are formalizing that work and announcing the Reproductive Rights Task Force. The task force will continue working across government and with stakeholders, reproductive rights organizations, patients, providers, law firms, and others, to explore every legal option to protect and provide comprehensive reproductive health services. While we recognize that congressional action is the best answer, we will not be deterred from using every tool at our disposal to defend reproductive freedom.
It just makes me want to gag, doesn't it? I mean, look at the words they use. I'm all for reproductive freedom. That's great. I'm all for reproductive justice, right? I'm all for reproductive health care. I mean, those are all good things if they truly mean what they mean, as opposed to being euphemisms for abortion and murder, right? It's just, it's horrific. Why don't we call it for what it is? Why do you have to whitewash something so corrupt and so dark and so evil, right? The task force, just to break down and kind of summarize what you said, is going to track state and local legislation that restricts a woman's ability to abort her child or seeks to penalize medical workers who perform abortions in a manner that's consistent with federal law. And the unit will also collaborate with federal agencies and secure and promote abortion access, including proactive and defensive legal action where appropriate. I think our nation deserves God's justice. I beg for his mercy. I really do. But when you see what's coming out of Capitol Hill and you wonder, I mean, how much longer can God? This is a sin that calls for clearly as justice, divine mercy revelation. Faustina saw an angel of wrath going to destroy a city that was the abortion capital of Europe at the time. America's exporting this woundedness, promoting this woundedness, legislating this woundedness. And it's causing a deep moral wound in our country. It's offending God above all. There are a couple bills that would supposedly codify Roe. And this is how dark, how macabre. And forgive me, I almost don't want to talk about this. I don't want to even bring this up to you. Like Maggie and I have this debate all the time. We discuss, oh, we need to bring some hope. We need to let people know. And I am a man of hope. We're going to pray in a few minutes. We're going to talk about a lot of other things coming up here. But I just want you to be aware, because I don't know if this is often reported. It's whitewashed with these fancy terms like reproductive justice. There's a couple bills. I'll put them before you. Take them for what they are. H.R. 8296, right? It goes far beyond Roe. This is how wild Satan is becoming. It's officially titled Women's Health Protection Act. Pro-lifers, you know what they call it? We'll use words. Women's Health Protection Act. I'm all for women's health. I'm all for protecting that, right? Yeah, right. Here's what it translates into. Abortion on Demand Until Birth Act. That's really what this is all about, right? That's H.R. 8296, H.R. 8297, one digit off, right? It's officially called Ensuring Access to Abortion Act. You know what pro-lifers are calling it? The Loopholes for Child Traffickers Act. Catholic Votes Director of Government Affairs, a guy named Tom McCluskey, he said both of these bills are, and I want to quote him here, quote, more radical than Roe. They would force you, the taxpayer, to pay for abortions and also force healthcare professionals to participate in and facilitate abortions. And for lawmakers, he said, if you're a state legislature, if you're a state legislator, or if you introduce legislation, let's say to protect the unborn, well, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, is going to be authorized to investigate you for violating this false right to an abortion. It's like, you talk about crazy, huh? That is crazy, no doubt about it. Listen to this. I want to share with you Elizabeth Warren. If you thought things could get any more wacky, listen to these thoughts.
In Massachusetts right now, those crisis pregnancy centers that are there to fool people who are looking for pregnancy termination help outnumber true abortion clinics by 3-1. We need to shut them down here in Massachusetts, and we need to shut them down all around the country. You should not be able to torture a pregnant person like that.
Oh my gosh, I am speechless. Sometimes I wonder, I mean, really, torture? A crisis pregnancy center, Elizabeth, is torturing a pregnant woman? I would love any woman who's been to a crisis pregnancy center and has found help and consolation and direction, is glad they chose their baby, to call in and share their story. I would love to hear. Or you know what, even better, don't call me. Call Senator Warren. You know, we'll get you the Senate switchboard and call her and say, here's my story. Write your story down. It's terrible. These organizations struggle just to get by to help these women. They struggle to get by, and yet she calls them torture chambers. That's what she's saying. Senator Josh Hawley, I want to share with you what he said. Here's one more exchange. We just had to clip this one for you during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing yesterday on the legal aftermath of the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe. Berkeley Law Professor, Professor Kira Bridge, she just engages in this astonishing behavior to Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri's line of questioning. Take a listen.
Professor Bridges, you said several times, you've used a phrase, I want to make sure I understand what you mean by it. You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy. Would that be women?
Many women, cis women, have the capacity for pregnancy. Many cis women do not have the capacity for pregnancy. There are also trans men who are capable of pregnancy, as well as non-binary people who are capable of pregnancy.
So this isn't really a women's rights issue.
We can recognize that this impacts women while also recognizing that it impacts other groups. Those things are not mutually exclusive, Senator Hawley.
Oh, so your view is that the core of this right then is about what?
So I want to recognize that your line of questioning is transphobic, and it opens up trans people to violence by not recognizing that.
Wow, you're saying that I'm opening up people to violence by asking whether or not women are the folks who can have pregnancies?
So I want to note that 1 out of 5 transgender persons have attempted suicide. So I think it's important
because of my line of questioning.
Because
we can't talk about it.
Because denying that trans people exist and pretending not to know that they exist.
I'm denying
dangerous.
That trans people exist by asking
you
if you're talking about women having pregnancies.
Do you believe that men can get pregnant?
No, I don't think women can get
pregnant. So you are denying that trans people exist. Thank
and
you.
That leads to violence. Is this how you run your classroom? Are students allowed to question you?
Absolutely.
Or are they also treated like this?
Where no,
they're told that they're opening up people to violence.
We have a good time in my class. You should join.
Oh, I bet.
You might learn a lot.
Wow, I would learn a lot. I've learned a lot just in this exchange.
Absolutely.
Extraordinary.
I mean, what are we, in bizarro world? Did you hear that line of did you see how she rationalized or tried to justify or somehow explain? He's asking very direct questions and doesn't answer the questions, accuses him of being transphobic, all this wacky, wacky stuff. And guess what? That's what kids are being taught in our higher, levels of education in this country. Be well aware of where your kids are going, what classes are being offered, what they're being exposed to. It's unbelievable. I went to share that with you, and I thought Josh Hawley just handled himself incredibly well. He's very articulate. I'm grateful for Senator Hawley and his demeanor there. Let me change gears. I've had enough of this for now. I'll continue to pull back the veil on really what's happening on Capitol Hill and around the country in the halls of our legislators and the the insanity that's there so that you can be well aware, you can protect your loved ones, and above all, you can pray. And do your part, too. When you go to the ballot box, put into office moral, well-formed people. All right? I mean, it makes a huge, huge difference. The Labor Department today, as I was sharing with you a minute ago, reported that inflation's gone up 9.1% from last year. I mean, that's stunning, right? Those numbers are off the charts. I know it's not the news you want to hear, but here's the reality. Of course, it's hitting the gas pump. It's hitting the grocery store, right? With food, the one report I saw is not going to get better, at least not soon. There are a lot of reports out of states like Texas and Oklahoma where they haven't had a whole lot of rain lately. Several people have written to me saying, could you please pray for rain in the West? And we'll certainly do that. But ranchers are lining up at cattle sale barns to sell off their herds. One woman from Texas was driving on a two-lane Texas road, turned on her camera as she got close to the sales barn. And for about a mile, she said, it was backed up, right? Traffic with ranchers and their stock trailers filled with cattle. And that was just one side. There were still more lined up coming from the other direction. And one man named Randy Turner posted it on Facebook. He says, for friends who don't know why people are selling their cattle for nothing at these sale barns, it's because they can't feed them. Here's my pastor. And he walked through the sounds of this dry, crackling field. And he says, that's what it's going to be like when it's covered with ice. There's no rain plus fertilizer. That's a petroleum product, by the way. It's $1,100 a ton this year. It used to be $350. The diesel for tractors went from $2.25 to $5. Nobody can afford to buy hay now. And the Fed solutions raise interest rates so that if you try to get a loan, even that's more expensive. So your food's going to get more expensive. And if you add that with the Colorado River, which I've been talking about, the main source of water for Arizona and New Mexico, good portion of California, including the Inland Empire, huge amounts of our nation's fruits and vegetables are grown. We're going to face some tough times. I've invited today the executive director of Catholic Rural Life to join me. You can find him at that website, CatholicRuralLife.org. Jim Ennis is back once again. Jim, thanks for your time today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for having me on.
So I'd love to get your take. What are you hearing from farmers and ranchers? How difficult is this? This is one person down in Texas. Maybe it's an anomaly, but I know you got your finger on the pulse of this. Where are we?
Yeah, we have farmer members all over the country, and we try to keep our finger on this pulse. And what's happening with a lot of the ranchers is exactly what you described, that the price of feed and the price of fertilizer have gone through the roof over the past year. And it's really been a confluence of factors. It's been there's been some drought. There's been obviously difficulty in getting fertilizer because of the war in the Ukraine and this sanctions on Russia, which also provide a lot of the fertilizer for the world. So all these input costs have gone through the roof. So ranchers who depend on feed to feed their cattle are paying exorbitant prices. And it's just that the cost of production now is higher than what they can get on the market for their beef.
So is there anything the federal government or even the state governments could do to help these farmers? I mean, what's being done on the federal level or state?
Well, yeah, both the federal state level, you've got USDA and you've got your state departments of agriculture that are actually, they very much are trying to support all their farmers and ranchers where it applies to support them with, safety nets when the price of production outpaces the price of their products going to market. So both at a federal level, you've got a farm bill and other types of programs that can help support those farmers, but it won't make up for the total loss, but there are some safety nets there that can help in individual cases.
So is this going to force ranchers and farmers, Jim, out of their livelihoods? What's it mean for, consolidation in the market? What do you see coming if this persists?
Well, I mean, if it persists for, multiple years, yes, then we're really in trouble when we lose farmers and ranchers because of bankruptcy or just the giving up because it's hopeless. But farmers are resilient. The ranchers that I've spoken to and talked with, they knew that, things were going to be a challenge as soon as the war broke out in the Ukraine, that there were all kinds of projections. And already post, with COVID and all kinds of restrictions and the supply chain problems, prices were already going up. I mean, you know, the cost of inputs went up 80% a year ago, 30% in the last 6 months. So all in all, you know, farmers are cognizant of this, and they're managing. But some will leave for sure, and others will hang in there, and, you know, God willing, and pray that they can be profitable next year.
Well, Jim, I only have a few minutes. Just final thoughts from you. Is there any spiritual practice that we as Catholics can do to help this? And my heart goes out to you and all these ranchers trying to sell their herds because they can't feed them.
I mean, one basic one is saying when we say grace before a meal, is including those who grow our food, who raise our food, who raise the animals, that, you know, the beef that we eat or the pork, just to pray for them and to pray for their livelihood and for protection. And also weather. I mean, weather is a big factor, as you mentioned earlier. And so, you know, for those areas right now where there are droughts, praying for rain, but also praying for farmers' mental health, because it can be very stressful, very stressful. And so that we try to provide support and network with farmers and share, you know, the grief and the challenges, as well as the hopes and opportunities that are there for farmers.
Jim, thank you for what you do and for that message. It's an important one. I'm grateful. I wish we had a few more minutes. We'll have you back, though. This is a story that's not going away. I know it will continue to develop. So people can check you out and learn more at CatholicRuralLife.org, right? That's the best way to get connected?
That's the best way to get connected. And, Drew, I appreciate your show, and thank you for sharing this message with your broad audience.
Now you got it. That's Jim Ennis, Executive Director of Catholic Rural Life. And let's take to heart what he says, especially prayer for rain and those who faithfully serve us as farmers, who feed the nation. Take a short pause. I'll be back on the other side. Speaking of that, and I probably should have asked Jim about this, weed killer. There's a study right now. I don't know if you heard this, and this may more than likely affect you, that shows that 80% of people have weed killer in their urine. I'll fill you in. Stay with me.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
More than 80% of urine samples drawn from children and adults around the U.S. contained weed-killing chemicals that are linked to cancer with carcinogens in them. And this is a statistic that I don't think it takes a scientist, but scientists are saying is disturbing and concerning. The report was done by the CDC, or the Centers for Disease Control, and they took a sample of 2,310 urine samples, and that was intended to be representative of the U.S. population. And over 1,800, and specifically 1,885, were laced with detectable traces of glyphosate. This is an active ingredient in herbicides sold around the world, things like Roundup.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, this should alarm everyone. Give you a pause. A new CDC study found glyphosate in 80% of urine samples that they took a look at. That's a key ingredient in weed-killing products. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Thank you for joining me. I'm here to give you a look at life you probably won't find anywhere else. We'll certainly pray the chapel in about 30 minutes, too. So tell others about that. We'll pray for God's mercy, his protection. God's the answer to all the problems we face in this country. And I can't really say that enough, whether it's personal, whether it's societal, whether it's in nature. God's in control of everything. And we live in a very different time, a time unlike any of our ancestors. Here in the United States, you know, we don't like weeds in our lawn, right? This is a new thing. We spend about $40 billion a year on lawn care, including buying herbicides to kill off dandelions and other kinds of weeds that kind of ruin the look. One of the main chemicals that you spray on your lawns is, could be, or your weeds in your garden or whatever it may be, Roundup, right, from Monsanto. But not only do you spray your lawns, it's also, that's used in, well, it's used heavily on our crops, especially on feed corn and soybeans for cattle, both beef and dairy. And the reason for that is that, you know, Monsanto genetically engineered the seeds for those crops so that they'll be able to withstand being sprayed with Roundup. And that makes it, you know, convenient for farmers. They can just spray all the fields without having to worry about, you know, killing off what they're trying to grow. Technology, in some respects, I think, wow, that's fantastic, isn't it? The problem is that the active ingredient in Roundup, glyphosate, if I can get it out of my mouth, was classified by the World Health Organization as a probable human carcinogen in 2015. And you know, there was one researcher that linked it to non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So the EPA, you know, they didn't agree with that assessment. The federal court recently told the EPA that, you know, you better reassess your statement. So the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, started to look into glyphosate impacts on human health. And for starters, they got, I think they looked at like a couple thousand people who represented a vast cross-section of America. And they said, look, we need urine samples. So they gave them these urine samples. And what they found, astonishingly, and this amazed me too because the number is so high. I thought, oh, yeah, you'll find it in a certain population of people when you deal with thousands. But 80% of the people, 80% of those that gave their urine had glyphosate in their urine. 80%. There was a headline that grabbed my attention, and I wanted you to be aware of this. It said, quote, weed killer ingredient tied to cancer found in 80% of urine samples. Tied to cancer. I scratch my head sometimes. I sit back and I think, you know, why is cancer so high in this country? Why does one out of three Americans at some point in their life contract some form of cancer? There's natural causes, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure when nuclear testing was done in the 40s and 50s and 60s, people had fallout from that when it was in the atmosphere and the air. I'm sure there were ingredients in the food. We used to eat a lot healthier, more naturally, right? Now we're dealing with genetically modified crops. We're dealing with heavy, heavy, chemicals on those crops. We're seeing what's happening in our cattle and in the food that we eat. You know, even do you talk about runoff? One final thought here. You know, you talk about doing your lawns or farmers, you know, doing their fields. Quite often this runs into our waterways. And now they're finding in streams, or even aquatic life is being mutated. It's a strange ripple effect. So I've invited today Dr. Sean O'Mara to join me. One of my favorite guests. I love him when it comes to this science. He's big on the gut biome. I've mentioned in the past he's a former prosecutor. He's currently right now the medical director of the whole healthcare at the VA hospital in St. Cloud, Minnesota. But he's been with us to talk about a wide spectrum of health issues. And I brought him back today to take a look at glyphosate and cancer and what you need to know. Doctor, good to have you back. Welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, Drew. Great to be back with you and the Relevant Radio audience. Great topic. Once again, just love what you guys are doing at Relevant Radio.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your expertise and your balance, too. This story was shocking to me when I saw 80%. I look at cancer. A friend of mine who I have traveled with on pilgrimage, she's dying of cancer, given weeks to live. My producer, Tom, who I know you know, his daughter contracted cancer this past year and within weeks was dead. And I'm just thinking, why do we see so many Americans with cancer? Is there a direct connection between glyphosates and cancer? What do you know?
So the short answer to that is we are not absolutely certain, but there is a strong association. The explanation why isn't it more clear is because most of the studies that have been done to date have looked at the impact directly on glyphosate on human cells. And you've already mentioned the intermediary, which is likely the source for an indirect but equally deadly and health harming influence through our microbes. And those microbes, Drew, and we've talked about this many times, are as much a part of our body as any cells. But to date, the research has focused mostly on human cells. But we're going to find as research expands and looks at this critically important intermediary of our human microbiome, that glyphosate is far more problematic than it's understood. So stay tuned to the future research. But for those that are listening today and are discerning enough to pay attention to associations without exact direct causal proof, you can begin to benefit your own health by paying more attention to how your microbiome is being disrupted or either harmfully or positively by the decisions you make. And that's why I stay clear of glyphosate. I don't use it in my yard. I prefer weeds to harming my health. And I think that's that was a good introduction that you had about that.
Let me. I know that the runoff from that stuff has caused mutations with certain fish or aquatic life having different genitalia, all sorts of things. Okay, that's the runoff from it. There are services that come to many Americans' homes right now that weed and feed their lawn. Is that a problem? I mean, should we be concerned about that?
I absolutely believe it is a problem. It
really?
Just hasn't been tracked and really followed. I, for one, probably many other people across the country are avoiding these products. And by the way, glyphosate is just one named compound of organophosphates, of which there are many others. It just happens to be marketed very well and in very large quantities. But there are others out there that use similar mechanisms that are disrupting our health through our microbiome. So a really interesting way, as I think is important, and I want to get into it, is that you can protect yourself besides just stop using these products. I took a look at some studies I've been following for several years now. And bacteria, there's a particular species of bacteria that's very helpful to break down organophosphates, and in particular glyphosate. And the one bacteria is Acetobacter. So Acetobacter is found in organic apple cider vinegar. Now, I don't want to sound like some sort of kook. I am a dedicated researcher.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm going to tell you that we we really need to be looking at this traditional food, this organic apple cider vinegar, for its contribution to the microbiome. And you can go ahead and dismiss it because it seems like an old, kind of a wives remedy. But it truly is a beneficial compound. And for those listening and the relevant radio audience, I would recommend incorporating organic apple cider vinegar into your diet because of the microbiome contribution. It's really those bacteria that get down into us. We're just a collection of bags, a collection of microbes, really, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And so organic apple cider vinegar would be a good way to help mitigate this threat. And I think in the future, if you're listening and you're entrepreneurial, if you could introduce those kind of bacteria into your yard, you got a product that you could sell that I think in the future a lot of homeowners are going to want to get that as soon as we find out how bad glyphosate and organic phosphates are. This bacteria just growing in your yard is going to help to clean it up because somebody's going to have to clean this up.
My producer, Maggie, was saying she made a white vinegar, table salt, and dish soap formula that she uses in her garden and stuff, as opposed to using those artificial chemicals. It's an old recipe, but it supposedly works. Yeah, I'm curious about the apple cider vinegar there. I want to go back to that because there's lots of different type of vinegars, right? Does it have to be apple cider? There's white wine, rice vinegar, there's balsamic vinegars, there's all these different vinegars. Is it the vinegar itself or is it the apple cider in particular?
Well, great question. What it is really the microbes. In the case of apple cider vinegar, one of the chief microbes in apple cider vinegar is Acetobacter. Now, that species of bacteria is also present in other vinegars, but you're going to want to look at its particular composition. But vinegar in general, the recommendation I make to our veterans and for clients that are patients I work with is to make sure it's organic and non-pasteurized. If it's pasteurized, it's cooked off those microbes. Mm. And it's less about the nutritional value, Drew, than it is about the microbial value. Because these bacteria, the beneficial bacteria, go down into your gut, they reproduce, and then they amplify their benefits through future generations of those beneficial microbes that start living within your gut. So to answer your question, you want it to be organic, you want it to be non-pasteurized, you want it to be raw, fermented, and you look for the term with the mother, M-O-T-H-E-R. The mother is a term to describe the colony of microbes that still are alive within that particular product. So great question. There are probably many different forms of vinegar. It doesn't have to be just apple cider.
I want to follow up on that. Let me give you the phone number out too. My guest today, Dr. Sean O'Mara, I could put him on for an hour and a half. I'm always fascinated by what he reveals. And you might have a question or a comment. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about glyphosates, a glyphosate, I should say, which has been found in 80% of those tested in their urine, and its connection potentially to cancer. So how do you stay healthy? What are good alternatives? What's the solution for so many of these cancer-causing agents that we're encountering? Doctor, just to the microbiome and to probiotics as well, because you talked about organic apple cider vinegar. I'm going to get some of it. I'm assuming you mix it with water, you drink it, you put it on your salad, you do something with it like that? You just drink it straight? I mean, what do you suggest in terms of consumption?
Yeah, so great question. So there are a lot of people that are, unfortunately, reading about its benefit and drink it straight, but I do not recommend that because it has acetic acid in it and fairly high concentration. So that could be problematic if it's ingested too long and too frequently for the enamel on your teeth. So I recommended diluting it. So my typical recommendation is about an 8 to 10-ounce glass of water. Put in about 2 to 3 teaspoons or just a little bit under a tablespoon in a soda can of that apple cider vinegar, and that will dilute it sufficiently. Yep. To me, it's the single best-tasting beverage I've ever had. It's right up there with a cup of coffee. I really enjoy it, but it will take some time to get used to, and once those microbes live in you, you start loving it.
Well, you know, I've got to take a break. So when we come back, we'll go to the fall calls, and maybe you can answer this question on the other side. I take a probiotic. After speaking to you, I've ordered one with like a billion CFUs, and I also have gummy, micro. I buy all these different probiotics. Is it good to switch them off? How do we know which one is good? When it comes to probiotics for a healthy gut biome, a gut biome. Are we better off going natural with kimchi and other things? We'll look at that and much more. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Feel free to join me for the Chaplet. That's about 10 minutes away. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to Dr. Sean O'Mara, dealing with everything from the microbiome, something that I think is a really, it's a wild new frontier in the world of medicine. I think scientists and physicians are really going to be revealing the power of this in the future. We're going to be unlocking some of its secrets, and we're going to find healthier lives and sicknesses, diseases being reversed, obesity disappearing. It's pretty wild. Dr. O'Mara's been talking to me about it for a while, and I was asking him about this in light of a story that came out regarding glyphosate and its link to cancer. They did a study recently, and they found out, and glyphosate, by the way, is found in Roundup. It's the active ingredient in it in about 80% of the people that they took urine samples for. So more than likely, somebody you know or love might have the same type of result. Doctor, I'm going to go to the phones. Before I do, though, probiotics. I've talked in the past about fecal transplants and this wild new frontier with these types of bacteria and how they can bring health, how obesity can be reversed, things along those lines. You can go online and order probiotics, right? And you can get all sorts of them. I have probably three different types of probiotics in my cabinet. Is it good to mix them up? Does one do more than the other? How do we know they're effective? Are we better off just going naturally, getting kimchi or fermented foods? What do you recommend for somebody who says, I would like to have a more healthy gut biome? Because I'm sure the stuff we're eating right now is killing it, really, offsetting
it. Yeah, so great question. I get it a lot. And my recommendation is save your money. Don't spend it on probiotic supplements. The supplement companies out there are well-intended, but their first and highest priority is they're not a charity. They're out there to make money. And they're leveraging the human mindset to want to take a pill to solve a problem. So I'd like to encourage the listeners today to avoid that tendency. And here's what we need to do. We all need to eat healthier food. And it begins with eating, including when you make healthy choices on food, which is food in whole form, meats and vegetables in whole form, that you incorporate the traditional eating patterns of many healthy people around the world that we study that use some regular practice of regularly ingesting fermented food. So kimchi, fermented sauerkraut that's not pasteurized. Mm-hmm. You got to buy it in the refrigerated section. Kefir, yogurt, things that that have living microbes in them are the way to go.
What about pickles?
Yeah, pickles, I don't recommend them unless they're fermented. Typically, pickles are a pickling action, which is a chemical action, often used if anybody does pickling, alum and other chemicals that mm-hmm. that create a form, a chemical-changed form that does not benefit your microbiome. So it has like an astringent action, just shrinks up things. But really what you want to do is ferment vegetables, ferment mm-hmm. Animal products, cheese, dairy, things like that. And if for those listening right now, and you hate the taste of kimchi and ferment, just do a little teeny tiny bit. Start with like your finger dip into that jar, lick it and swallow it with non-chlorinated water because chlorine disrupts your microbiome too. Spring water, get that little bit of microbes into you on a frequent basis, and you'll gradually get to be able to tolerate those fermented foods and even like them and eventually love them like I do. I can't eat today, Drew, without kimchi or fermented sauerkraut or kvass or some other fermented food.
I'm with you. I love kimchi. You know, there's another big craze. I want to go to the phone. A lot of people are waiting to join us, but is it kombucha? Is that the name? You know what I'm talking about? I don't know if I'm saying it correctly.
Yeah, so it's pronounced, most people call it kombucha.
Kombucha.
And I love it. It's got, but here's the thing. If you're buying it in the store, it's like Coca-Cola with microbes added to it. So what do I mean by that? It's just loaded with sugar because those companies, again, exist to make profit. And if you buy a drink that tastes like vinegar, it doesn't sell as well as you buy a drink that tastes like soda and Coke. So those are filled with sugar. Make your own kombucha, and you'll end up with a much better fermented drink that you'll get used to and you love. And that's what I do. My kombucha tastes more like my vinegar. And I love it, and it's more beneficial than the store-bought. But conceptually, it's a good idea. It's just they don't ferment it long enough.
Doc, I'm going to come and visit you just to have dinner with you at your house. All right, I'm going to invite myself over. Get a healthy meal. Sounds great. All right, Sarah's listening in Wisconsin. Hey, Sarah, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So you answered a lot of my questions already about the kombucha and things like that. I do have one more just quick question is mm-hmm. When you talk about the difference between pickling your own vegetables and fermenting your own vegetables, is it still beneficial at all to pickle your own vegetables, or would you just recommend like for, you know, I'm talking about like for canning purposes and things like that, we try and do like,
so I'm going to say no. And the reason why is one of the benefits to fermentation over canning is that there's these things called lectin. And lectins are more commonly, the most popular one is gluten. So gluten disrupts our gastrointestinal tract. And there are many other forms of lectins, and they're in vegetables. We just don't have it. They're completely understood. We figured out gluten. But when you ferment through microbes, it gets rid of those disruptors, those lectins. But when you can and you do pickling, they're still in there. So it's little tiny toxic exposures in these plants that we don't entirely understand. Those toxins are better tolerated and eliminated, I should say, when you ferment and not when you pickle. So I encourage everybody to switch over from pickling to fermenting their pickles and their vegetables, and they'll have a much better health outcome.
All right. Hey, Sarah, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. I'm sorry. I'm like a child. I got a million questions. I just want to get in. Honey, what about that? Sometimes people like to use it in their coffee. I do at times. But if you kill the beneficial properties by bringing the temperature of honey up, are you okay with that? Or what about honey and just in general?
Yes. Yeah. So if you're going to use honey, you definitely don't want to heat it to kill off the microbes and many of the elegant molecules that are present in honey. However, honey in your body acts just like sugar. So it raises your blood sugar and it causes an insulinogenic response. So your insulin goes up. So it, like many things, it can lead to higher degrees of inflammation in your body. So I don't consume honey. The other interesting thing is with honey is that it disrupts your production of nitric oxide. I know there's one study that shows it does the opposite, but there's a lot more problem with it suppressing nitric oxide, which helps to really optimize your cardiovascular choke. So I have visible pulses. I'm a little bit unusual. Whenever I take honey, my visible pulses that you can actually see disappear because of the suppression of nitric oxide. So I'm not a huge fan of honey. I tell my patients that the enemy tastes sweet. We should be avoiding sweet things. We need to be more meat and vegetables, and especially fermented foods, get these microbes in you. So generally, I tell people stay away from honey, but like if you're going to do anything, all things in moderation except for healthy foods.
Now, why did we have to end our conversation on a bad note? I love honey. I love sweets. That's my weakness. Hey, doctor, thank you for being with us. We're going to pray the chaplet. I'll pray for you and your family. And next time, we'll carve out a lot more time. A lot of people wanting to get in on the conversation. So let's revisit this, okay, if you'd be willing to do that.
Absolutely, Drew. Again, pleasure to be with you and the Relevant Radio audience. God bless.
Thank you. Let's pray now together. We'll pray for Dr. Sean O'Mara, and we'll pray for you and whatever your needs might be. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy is straight ahead. Stay with me.